Hi, I'm Judy Frazier, president and founder of We the Kids. We the Kids puts God back into America's history. Listening to We the Kids radio show will inspire you and your kids to have a positive American identity, clear direction, and a powerful purpose for your life. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to We the Kids radio show for kids from 8 to 108. I am Arch Hunter, a father, a husband, and an historian.
And I'm Lydia Nuttall, a mom and executive board member for We the Kids and author of Forgotten American Stories, Celebrating America's Constitution. And in the show, we're going to hear from the We the Kids Liberty Players.
The mission of We the Kids is to put God back into America's stories, to help American kids be proud to be an American, to love and defend America's Constitution, and learn the principles of freedom that establish unprecedented freedom in our country so that they can preserve freedom in America.
And that is so important. That's why we're doing this show. So we're glad you're listening.
And today's forgotten American story. What happened to those who signed the Declaration of Independence? And this is part three of three programs that we have been doing on the signers of the Declaration of Independence. So on previous shows, we learned Lydia has talked about the sacrifices made by the families of three or more signers of the Declaration of Independence. And on our last show, Lydia talked about the families of John Hart, Abraham Clark, and Francis Lewis.
And we also learned why they were willing to sacrifice their homes, their farms, their lives, their income, their reputations, etc., for independence and liberty, because they wanted freedom from the tyrannical government that was ruling over them.
And Lydia, what were some of those words that we had talked about and defined in our previous show?
Well, I just used one of them that was tyrannical, which is kind of a branch or a spinoff from tyranny. We learned that tyranny means a cruel and oppressive government or rule, and that a tyrant is a cruel and oppressive ruler. We also learned about despotism, which means someone that's exercising absolute power over us, especially in a cruel and oppressive way, and that usurp. These are all words in the Declaration of Independence. To usurp means to take a position or power of importance illegally or by force. So this is everything that the colonists were dealing with back in the early days of our American history, which is why they had enough. We don't want this kind of oppression anymore. We want to be free. So goodbye. See you later. King George III.
It's not going to be that easy, but basically that's what I wanted. So we want to invite everyone that's 8 to 108 to ponder this. What thoughts or ideals have entered your mind about what you can do to defend and preserve liberty in your community, in your country, and in your state? And how can you make a plan to commit to doing it every day?
Yep, that's so true. Because if we're each rolling up our sleeves and trying to do our part to defend and preserve liberty as our founders did, especially these gentlemen who signed the Declaration of Independence, then hopefully we can preserve collectively the liberty, the freedom that we have, not just for us, but we want to preserve it for our own children and our children's children. That is imperative.
Oh, yeah.
Someone did it for us back in the day, so we need to keep passing that on to others. But it takes work, takes effort, takes sacrifice, as we've been discussing, by learning the stories of these signers of the Declaration of Independence.
And Lydia, you gave us some stories of six of the signers of the Declaration of Independence that sacrificed a tremendous amount. What drove these men and their families to give up their lives, their fortunes, and sacred honor for the cause of liberty? What caused them to sacrifice so much for freedom and our liberty?
Well, it's amazing. The answer, as we started touching on in one of our previous shows, is actually found in the Declaration of Independence. when Thomas Jefferson and the four others were in charge of writing this Declaration of Independence, they actually listed 27 reasons why they felt justified in becoming independent from the rule, the tyrannical rule of King George III. And so we learned some of those last time. This time we're going to go into the last part of those 27 reasons, or they call it the 27 injuries by the King of Great Britain against the colonies is what they called it. So one of the words we need to know before we read some of these is quartering. Now you mentioned what quartering means, and this means not quartering. There used to be a quartering where they'd cut you in quarters, you know, as a form of torture and death. But this quartering means
putting the soldiers in individual private homes to provide lodging and accommodations, particularly for the soldiers.
Yeah. So how would you like that, everybody, to have someone banging on your door, someone from a foreign country, an army officer or a soldier, saying, hey, ma'am or sir, by order of the king or order of whatever, you're to vacate the premises because we need your home. Your beds, your food, your everything for housing me and my troops. Or you have to share your house with them.
Right.
So that's quartering. How about the word abdicated?
One of my favorite words for many different reasons, Lydia, but to fail, to fulfill or undertake, to give up, particularly in the area of responsibility.
Okay. You're going to hear the word abdicated here in the Declaration of Independence, a part of it that we read. So how about plunder?
That means to steal goods from one place or a person, typically using force and in the time of war or civil disorder. So most of the time when soldiers, troops would come into an area, they would just take anything they wanted from private citizens or farmers. They would plunder their property and take their cattle, their livestock, their food, their clothing, their personal belongings. They would just take whatever they wanted to with force.
Yeah, can you just imagine? I mean, already I'm feeling anxiety of that were to ever happen to us in our day. We're really blessed as Americans because we really haven't been exposed to that except for maybe the Civil War, but where we have an army come and invade our country and those foreign troops taking what is ours. How about ravaged? The word ravaged is also in the Declaration of Independence.
It means like to severely damage or to be devastated. And oftentimes when an army came into an area, they would simply ravage the area and leave nothing there of any value for them. They would just simply destroy everything.
This word is interesting. A mercenary. So a mercenary is a professional soldier that's hired to serve in a foreign army. And in one of our previous shows too, for instance, when we talked about the Battle of Trenton, our George Washington and his soldiers fought against the Germans who serve as professional soldiers to fight against us as British Americans. So that's a mercenary.
And Lydia, in Europe, it was very common practice to do this. When your country's army is not fighting, oftentimes another country that was at war would hire your army to help to fight for them.
So
the British had 30,000 Hessen come and fight alongside of them here in America.
30,000. Good grief.
And in Trenton, the Hessens that were there were under Colonel Rall, R-A-L-L. And before that, Lydia, up in the battles of Long Island, when 400 Continental soldiers surrendered, Colonel Howe had his Hessian soldiers bayonet every one of them and kill them, even after they surrendered. So the mercenary war is a very, very savage thing.
It's very ugly. I remember when my dad came back from serving in the Vietnam War. He came to my second grade class because my teacher invited him to come to our class. And one of the kids in my class asked him, what is war like? And the only thing my dad said was, it is very ugly. Mm-hmm. And then he went on with answering a different question. He didn't even want to elaborate on it. It's too horrific for second graders to hear a glimpse of what war is truly like. How about the word perfidy?
We don't see that word much anymore.
Yeah, we don't. So perfidy,
They mean being unworthy or untrustworthy. So deceitfulness or untrustworthiness.
Okay, perfidy. And then we have barbarous.
Barbarous, yes.
Barbarous.
We obviously
think just the way you said it.
Pirate, which means savagery, cruel, exceedingly brutal.
Okay, so that's barbarous. Okay, so contrast the word barbarous, which means savagely cruel or exceedingly brutal, with civilized. So civilized means an advanced stage of social and cultural development.
Hmm.
So you have barbarians, in essence, and then you have the civilized people that are, you know, by definition, more advanced, culturally developed. And then the last is kind of more of a phrase. It's called petitioned for redress.
Yeah.
That is actually in our first Bill of Rights. One of our rights is to be able to petition for redress. So what do you think that means, Arch? It means,
you know, to make a complaint or to seek assistance, particularly of one's government. And we oftentimes see that word, Lydia, in where lawyers use it when there's a trial, when they ask permission to redress the jury or the judge.
Okay, so that would mean that jury or judge, we're trying to seek for your assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we need a retrial or something, something like that. So that's petition for redress. So all of these are in the Declaration of Independence. We just thought it'd be good for us to review the definitions so that when we read the Declaration of Independence, particularly the section that lists those 27 injuries by the King of Great Britain against the colony, that then we can understand more fully what the colonists, the early American colonists, were experiencing at the time. Where they had had enough of the government by King George III and wanted independence, even though it meant great sacrifice on their behalf. So, are we ready to read that one little section of the Declaration of Independence, Arch?
Yes, if you would read that for us, Lydia.
Okay.
I want to say that of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence and the tremendous price that was on their heads if they were ever captured, there is only one who ever changed their mind and regretted that they signed the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, I didn't know there was one. Who?
Yes, Richard Stockton from New Jersey. Richard Stockton is the only one who changed their mind and regretted ever signing the Declaration.
Aw, I wonder now that he is gone if he sees a bigger picture. And is happy that he did it after all. Well, hopefully he is. Well, I am thankful that he is.
Yeah, well, so. Let's say that he probably is. But yeah, that's amazing, Lydia, that only one with the tremendous price that was on their heads, with tremendous sacrifice that they made personally, financially, and with their families, and they saw the devastation that happened here when the British came, when the war ensued, only one ever really regretted that they signed the Declaration.
That really is amazing.
It is amazing.
So thank you, all 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, including the one that regretted it afterwards.
Yeah.
We are indebted very much to them and their sacrifices. So here are some of the things in the Declaration of Independence that we listed as a reason why we justified our independence from this tyrannical government. So one was, it says, for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, and we learned what quartering means, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of the state. Well, that's not fair. That's not right, right? For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. So Arch, you mentioned in the last show something about that. What is a benefit of having a trial by jury?
Well, in our Constitution, our founders were very clear that we all have a right to trial by jury of our peers. So it has to be a consent of most of the time 12 individuals that are listening to the case, rather than just having possibly a royal governor or a royal jury that probably meant many times was biased towards the individual and was pro towards Parliament or King George. So it gives us the opportunity to have fairness in our legal system.
Yay! So yay, trial by jury. But that's what was denied us as British Americans. It continues, for transporting us beyond seas, S-E-A-S, like the ocean, transporting us beyond the ocean to be tried for pretended offenses. I wouldn't like that. You know, I have to be transported across the Atlantic Ocean from the continent of British America all the way to England to be tried for something that was pretended to begin with. That's not fair, but that's what was going on. Here's another one, and this one I'm not quite sure what it means, but maybe you can explain it. For abolishing, that means removing or taking away or erasing, the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, that means kind of a random government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these. That one I've never understood. Can you shed some light on that?
Well, Lydia, if we remember that each colony was established for different reasons. And so over a period of time, as time evolved, each colony had its own form of government. They had their own form of taxes. They had their own form of judicial system that people were living under. For example, people in Virginia thought it was fair to have people of Virginia govern them and to have certain rules and regulations for the state or the colony of Virginia that maybe didn't apply to Pennsylvania or New York or Rhode Island.
Okay.
So there was a whole different set of government for each one of them and regulations and even sometimes a money system and a taxation system in each colony that benefited that particular colony in and of itself. So there was really 13 different governments in the colonies. And now they're saying that was against us because now the king wants to put one government, one sovereign rule over all of us, you know, rule us, give us all regulations, judge us, give us laws that apply to every colony rather than seeing it as individual.
And the drawback of that is sometimes one size doesn't fit all.
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah. And Lydia, we see that. I mean, some states have some rules and regulations that particularly are advantageous to that state where it wouldn't be advantageous or necessarily apply to another state.
Well, thank you for elaborating on that. I'm appreciative because I've always wondered, what does that really mean? Here's some more. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. So that kind of goes along with what you were just saying.
Yeah.
He just erased everything that states were doing, said, hey, this is the way you're going to run it, whether it fits you or not.
Yeah.
It even says for suspending our own legislatures. That means saying, hey, you're not in session anymore, and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. So our own legislature, he said, never mind, you're no longer in effect. We're going to have my government rule over you in every kind of case. These next few are fascinating. I mean, it would boil my blood. It just does to make me even read it. It says, he has abdicated, that means he's given up government here, by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. What ruler of a nation wages war against his own people? Wrong. That's not good. So that's what the Declaration of Independence says as a reason why we wanted our independence from the King of Great Britain. Here's the next one. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. Why would any ruler or president or governor or whatever over his own people do that to his own people? That is, yeah, I'd be ticked at that too. And then it says, he is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy. Remember, that means deceitfulness and truthfulness, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. Woo! If you were King George III, how do you think he felt reading this Declaration of Independence? They sent this to him.
I know when he read this, his reaction was, obviously he was very angry. And he even became more aggressive towards trying to bring the colonies under control. And, you know, there's another reason why the signers, Thomas Jefferson, put a lot of these in, is because Jefferson and our founders realized that this was not only going to be read in Great Britain, it was going to be read all throughout the colonies, and it was going to be read all throughout Europe. So our signers were also hoping that they would get European support for our independence from our mother country.
Which it did.
It did. Eventually it did. So, and I want to go back a minute when you're talking about mercenaries, Lydia. And I said the British Parliament hired 30,000 Hessians to come here, soldiers to come fight for them. Lydia, 40% of those Hessians stayed after the revolution. They didn't go home.
Wow.
And the reason they stayed is because they saw the tremendous opportunity that they had here in America. So they decided it was much better to stay here and live out their lives and have their own families here than to go back into Germany.
That's pretty powerful and says a lot about our country, doesn't it?
It sure does. So again, we looked at the king, we looked at Parliament, and the king being a tyrant, Parliament acting in a very tyrannical way. And again, we'll say it all stems from representation.
A lack thereof.
A great lack of representation. Because if we had representation, Parliament and the king would know exactly what we were thinking. And we would know what Parliament and the king was thinking. And because we didn't have representation, ultimately, we paid a high price with the second longest war in American history.
Yeah, well, 8 years, right?
8 years.
Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we should all look at all of the signers of the Declaration of Independence and see the sacrifice they made so that we could live in this wonderful country of liberty and freedom.
Amen.
So we'd like to invite everyone from 8 to 108 to ponder this. What sacrifices are you willing to make to preserve liberty for yourself, your family, and your friend?
And one of my favorite quotes is this, because sometimes we think, you know, little me, I can't make a difference. But this is a saying that was found inscribed on a section of the Berlin Wall. It says, many small people in many small places doing many small things can alter the face of the world. Ooh, love it.
Yeah.
Well, now we invite you to see what the We the Kids Liberty Players are up to.
My name is Sammy. I'm 10 years old, and I live in Arizona.
My name is Brandon. I'm 14 and live in Indiana.
And I'm 14. I live in South Carolina.
And my name is Soria.
We're the We the Kids Liberty Players. The Liberty Players present a history mystery guest. Of the last several weeks, the Liberty Players have been interviewing living historians about what it was like during the American Revolutionary War era. We have been so intrigued about our founding fathers that we went back in time to meet many of them. Today, we get to interview a history mystery guest who has traveled through time to meet us and answer our questions. Here are three clues we will share with you to help figure out who our history mystery guest is. The first clue is, this person was born in 1744 in the colony of Massachusetts. In that time in America, only boys were allowed to attend school. This person's sister and her husband founded the second school in the United States to accept girls.
The second clue is, this person's cousin, Dorothy Quincy, was married to John Hancock, the first governor of Massachusetts, and a president of the Continental Congress.
The third clue is, the town of Quincy, Massachusetts, was named for this person's grandfather, Colonel John Quincy, one of the most important citizens to the colony of Massachusetts.
Do you know who today's history mystery guest is? Brendan, can you please tell us?
It's Mrs. Abigail Adams.
Abigail Smith grew up in Weymouth, Massachusetts, a village near Boston. Abigail and her sisters were educated at home by their parents because only boys were allowed to go to school then. Abigail's grandfather, John Quincy, was active in the colonial government and served as a speaker of the Massachusetts Assembly for 40 years, and his career in public service greatly influenced his granddaughter. Abigail met a young lawyer, John Adams, when she was 17 years old. 2 years later, they were married by Abigail's father, who was a minister. Later, as her husband became more involved in helping craft the founding documents of our country, she worked to raise their four children and run their household. With great encouragement from Abigail, John Adams became involved in politics as the ambassador to England, Holland, and then France. He also represented farmers in court and collaborated on several drafts of the Declaration of Independence with Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. During the crafting of the Declaration of Independence, she encouraged her husband to remember the ladies. To Abigail's political opponents, she was known as Mrs. President and was her husband's closest advisor throughout their marriage. She influenced her husband to advocate on behalf of freedom, married women's property rights, anti-slavery, liberty, and education. She was very opinionated and enjoyed holding weekly parties while her husband held political office. Look, there she is! Hello, Miss Abigail Adams. We're the We the Kids Liberty Players. My name is Sammy.
And I am Brendan.
And my name is Storia. It's so nice to meet you, Mrs. Adams.
Hello, Sammy, Brendan, and Storia. It's so great to meet you again.
Mrs. Adams, welcome back. We have some questions we would like to ask you. My question is, what did the newspapers have to say during the time of the Revolutionary War?
Most of the newspapers, especially the French and British papers, were against the revolution. Thomas Hutchinson, a British loyalist, observed that the newspapers who wrote about the American Revolutionary stated that freedom of the press had been interpreted as freedom to print everything that is libelous and slanderous. The papers then printed falsehoods about Hutchinson being in favor of the unpopular Stamp Act. As a result, his home was burned down. The difficulty in distinguishing fabricated news occurs when those who report the news subjectively pick whose side to favor and publish those stories as if true without fact-checking due to ulterior motives aplenty. The newspapers would mostly print unfavorable opinions of the American Revolutionary War, often siding with Great Britain. They called us ungrateful due to our objections to the increasing taxation. Like we should be grateful to being taxed into poverty? As tensions between England and the colonies increased, so did tensions between loyalists to Great Britain and those who sought freedom and a new American government. It was not until more colonists wanted freedom from Great Britain, along with the victories by General George Washington and his battalions, did a few newspapers start siding with the colonists. Perhaps it was out of fear people would stop buying their papers. Today, the United States is still referred to as the Great Experiment to Freedom.
Mrs. Adams, I have a question. Do you have any stories you can tell us about George Washington at the time of the Revolutionary War?
Yes, I do, actually. General George Washington told us of his Battle of Trenton. It was Christmas in the year of our Lord, 1775. The regiments headed by General George Washington marched onward to battle. It was fearfully cold, with snowstorms setting in. The harsh winds beat and faced by brave men. Our soldiers had no shoes. Some of them had tied old rags around their feet, while others remained barefoot. But not a man complained. Our American patriots were ready to suffer any hardship and die rather than give up their liberty, become slaves to the government. General George Washington gave his troops the directive, victory or death. American liberty was the prize as ordained by God. After defeating the British, the colonists became even more determined in declaring their freedom and more joined. After the war, 1,000 loyalists left America, among them James Putnam and Samuel Quincy. They were not worthy of any kinship. I told my dear husband, John, that such had come to pass was surely the work of the Lord and marvelous in our eyes. And my dearest John replied, "We live, my dear, in an age of trial. What will be the consequences? I know not." I wrote him back, as I tell everyone today, "In the heart of every patriot is the blue flame of liberty. We must keep lights burning bright." Thank you, dear friends.
Miss Adams, my question is, why did Thomas Jefferson write the Declaration of Independence instead of your husband, who is a lawyer, or Benjamin Franklin?
Oh, well, our family could not afford for my dear John to take any more time away from his law practice, including the cost to rent an apartment in Philadelphia while I managed the farm. John was also apprehensive about writing such an important document when so many people still disliked him for defending the British soldiers after the Boston Massacre. Mr. Benjamin Franklin, who was admired for his wit, kind personality, scientific accomplishment, as well as profound diplomatic ability, refused to write. He stated he would not put politics on paper and did not want anything he wrote to be edited. My dearest John wrote to our friend Thomas Pickering that Thomas Jefferson should write the Declaration of Independence for three reasons. First, he was a Virginian and would have the most amount of respect by the colonists. Second, John was viewed as obnoxious, suspected, and unpopular. Third, John believed Thomas Jefferson's writing style would gain the most approval from all of the 13 colonies, as unanimous consent was required.
Mrs. Adams, do you have any words of advice for us kids today?
Thank you for that question, Brendan. To answer that question, we must remember to remain strong and steadfast in our own beliefs and to not give up on our convictions. To remain free, we need to stand up for what is right and to be well-informed. So I would encourage all of you to never give up and to always remain learned in all of your studies. I say stay strong in your belief.
Thank you for that advice, Mrs. Adams. Thank you so much for joining us and answering our questions.
Thank you. I enjoyed meeting all of you again.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Storia, Brendan, and I were so excited that we got to go back in time to meet Mrs. Abigail Adams that we can hardly wait until next time to meet our next We the Kids History Mystery guest.
Until then, if you would like to be a We the Kids Liberty player, let us know.
You can contact us at wethekids@gmail.com. To read more about Abigail Adams, go to wethekids.us under We the Kids History Lesson. Thank you for listening to the We the Kids radio show.
And check out the WeTheKids.us website to find and listen to our previous We the Kids radio show lesson and to purchase your own copy of Forgotten American Stories Celebrating America's Constitution so that you and your family can follow along with us on our weekly radio shows. Thank you for supporting We the Kids. Now go forth, conquer your day.